You're tuned to the White Album Listening Party, a celebration of the 1968 release of the Beatles' double album landmark recording. It came to be known as the White Album for its unadorned all-white cover. I'm Paul Ingles. Along with a host of others, both here in our Albuquerque studios and around the country, we're listening to the White Album track by track to see what memories and stories come up. For the stories behind the songs, we're going to author Steve Turner, who literally wrote the book on that. It's called A Hard Day's Right. Steve, we close side two with two acoustic numbers, I Will from Paul McCartney and Julia from John Lennon. What can you tell us about this pair?
Julia and I Will, I mean, there's a similarity in that they're both songs written by, one by John, one by Paul, about the most important women in their lives. I think I Will was about Linda, because Linda Eastman at the time, came into Paul's life shortly after their stay in Rishikesh, when they come back to England. And in fact, she was in the studio for some of the recording of the White Album. Julia was written by John about his mother, who was certainly the most important woman in his life.
And just a word about Julia, John's mom. She had left John. He was being raised by an aunt.
That's right. John was living at home with his aunt Mimi, and Julia was living not too far away. And Julia would come over periodically to see John. She'd come over this day, and John wasn't in for some reason. And she left the house, crossed the road, and was hit by a car and was killed. And I think John was about 17 or 18 at the time. It was a terrible blow to John. And, you can attribute a lot of John's sort of bitterness and his misogyny, I think, to that happening. Maybe he never would have become the songwriter he became if that hadn't have happened. The first two lines of Julia are actually taken from a poem by Khalil Gibran. In fact, it's almost word for word. So he's used that as a starting point for the song.
Rob?
I love the song Julia. I think it shows a vulnerability, shows this side of John that's very romantic. And that part I love the most in his vocals, where he goes, so I sing a song of love. It's heartrending, you know, and his voice is double tracked, and it's just, it just always makes me think of John Lennon and remember him.
It's a really nice texture because it's fingerpicked, and it's the same pattern as Dear Prudence, but it's double tracked, once on an acoustic and once on an electric. Those two sort of timbres mixed together really beautifully.
Rob Martinez, why don't you start us off on I Will?
I Will is one of those perfect Paul McCartney ballads. For me, probably the most fascinating thing, I believe the bass line is Paul's voice.
Yeah, the bass is totally a cappella, and it's beautiful.
I heard that today when I was listening to it, and I was like, what? Is somebody singing that bass part? I'd never noticed that before.
I mean, what a cool idea. It's like, I want to do that on one of my songs if I ever write a song that good.
I wanted to say that the melody here really is one of those dreamy melodies. It sort of reminds me of those melodies from the 1930s and 1940s that you sort of feel like there's bluebirds in the air, you know, one of those romantic, heady melodies.
And I remember distinctly the radio commercial for the album that included a snippet of that. If you want me to, I will. It's such an absolutely stunning melodic phrase, you know.
You could just kind of see some girl, you know, swirling around in a beautiful dress onto a stage going, da 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 da. It's just timeless.
Who knows how long I've loved you, you know I love you still. Will I wait a lonely lifetime? If you want me to, I will. For if I ever saw you, I didn't catch your name, but it never really matters.
There's Julia, and before that, I Will, closing out side two, record one of the Beatles' White Album.
They almost sound as one. As we listen to them there back to back, it almost seems like they were paired that way on purpose. They're very, very similar in my head in their pacing and the way they're played. It's very simple, very straightforward, and very pretty songs.
I Will sounds like a Beatles song. It reminds me of the old Beatles or maybe something off of Rubber Soul, so I really love that song.
Travis?
It was the spring of 1969, and it was a beautiful Saturday morning, and one of my temporary roommates gave me a tab of window pane that morning.
For the uninitiated, that is a tab of acid, is that right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it looked like a little tiny chip of
plastic.
Microfilm or plastic or something,
sometimes,
and it was usually a purple color or something,
go.
You know? Yeah.
Man, I miss so much, you guys. Oh, man.
And I ingested it, and probably an hour and a half, 2 hours later, I was walking through the beautiful streets, which were a little wobbly at the time, of Ann Arbor, and I heard the song, Julia, coming. It seemed like it was coming from miles away, and it was drawing me like a siren in the Greek mythological sense. It seemed like it took a week for me to get to the source of that song, and when I got to where it was coming from. It was a garage sale. One of the students, the semester was over, and one of the students was packing up, and he had all of his albums out there, and this was the album that he was playing, and that was the second Beatles song I became familiar with after Rocky Raccoon was Julia, and I just loved it, and to this day I have an affinity for the name Julia as a result.
We're going to get into side three now, which starts with the rockers' Birthday and Your Blues. Steve Turner, what about these two?
Birthday, again, a song written by Paul. He wanted to do something in emulation. There was a song called Happy, Happy Birthday, which was a rock and roll song in the 50s, and he wanted to do just a celebratory birthday song that was kind of really hard rock. And Your Blues is, you know, it's John sort of mocking the blues idiom, but in fact singing a blues song. He was going through a really tough time, again, written out in India. His relationship with Cynthia was coming to an end. Yoko was on the scene. Yoko was writing him letters. So he was in turmoil. You know, he was wanting to be with her, and he was with Cynthia, and he didn't know what the honourable thing to do was. So Year Blues was about that. And also it was a time of the British blues boom in the late 60s in Britain. And there were always these arguments in the music papers about, you know, could white people sing the blues, you know, authentically sing the blues.
Yes, I'm lonely. Wanna die.
What I like about Your Blues is that it's an actual Beatles song. All the Beatles are playing the instruments they're supposed to be. Paul's not playing drums, John isn't playing bass. I think everyone's doing what they're supposed to do, and I think that's why it sounds so good.
Well, Ringo always liked Your Blues, he said, because it was recorded with the four of them in one room, mostly at the same time, which clearly wasn't the norm for this record.
Yeah, if you listen to it, there's a really obvious splice in it because they jammed for a really long time. And when they, you know, were confronted with this like 10-minute long song, they had to cut it down to a more sort of palatable length. There's this drum fill that goes ticka, ticka, ticka. And then it goes back into the original riff from the song.
It's musically very clever. I think in the verses, and I believe it's 3-4, it's a very slow bluesy dirge, but then it kicks in into almost like Heartbreak Hotel 4-4 breaks. It's really unpredictable in that sense, and I really like that.
And it's got the allusion to the Dylan song, you know, Ballad of a Thin Man, which confused me for the longest time. I didn't know what Lennon was singing, and then I finally saw the lyrics printed out. And he says, you know, feel so suicidal, just like Dylan's Mr. Jones, which I could never figure out what he was saying there.
Birthday comes first. Rob Martinez?
Birthday is an iconic song. Just shows just how lofty the Beatles had gotten by 1968, where Paul McCartney would write a song to possibly supplant our traditional birthday song. And I think he did a pretty good job. It's just fun to do, and I always try to play that one at birthdays.
You know, my understanding is that they were working on the album, and they took a break, and they went to Paul's house, which was very close to the studio, because they all wanted to watch The Girl Can't Help It on TV, which is this great sort of 50s rock and roll movie with the great title song by Little Richard. And they were also sort of psyched by seeing all the heroes of their youth in this movie that they went back and said, you know, let's just knock off a quick sort of 50s rock and roll number. And I think it was put together very quickly.
Yoko Ono and Patty Harrison are credited with backup vocals on this too.
Yeah, you can hear it's those terrible birthdays.
eagle picks my eye. The worm, he licks my bone. Feels so suicidal, just like Dylan, Mr. Girl, you know the reason why. Black cloud crossed my mind. Blue mist round my soul. Feel so suicidal. Even hang my rock and roll. Wanna die. Yeah, wanna die. If I ain't dead already. Girl, you know the reason why.
Okay, there's John Lennon's Your Blues and Birthday ahead of that. Your Blues, Scott?
Yeah, once more, John, we fall into that grinding blues. I can only think that he was listening to Muddy Waters a lot then or something, but it's real tortured soul music. It's a real grind. It's grunge long before there was the term grunge.
Yeah, and I think Cream was hot then and was influencing sort of the heavier sound too.
I'm understanding Susan when she says, whatever happened to the Beatles?
I think I was listening to this album a lot, but I think that I started listening to it more religiously when I got to be 18, 19, yeah. You know, and some of the angst and the despair that was, frankly, in a lot of those John Lennon songs was you know, finally getting around to speaking to me.
Well, I can remember when I was 19 or 20 wanting to skip through and just listen to the raunchy, depressing mm-hmm. songs.
We're going to close out this hour of our show with Mother Nature's Son. Steve Turner, what's the story behind this one?
Mother Nature's Son was written by Paul, again in Rishikesh, result of a lecture by the Maharishi, which must have been to do with nature. He was thinking of a song by Nat King Cole as well, which is called Nature Boy, which he'd always liked when he was a kid. And Paul was a great nature lover. Although he grew up in Liverpool, you always think urban, city, but you only had to go a few miles outside of where they lived in Liverpool, and you had countryside, and you could see the mountains of Wales from, you know, high points just around. So he always loved nature.
John Spurney, something on Mother Nature's Son?
Mother Nature's Son is another beautiful finger-picking song, and it's another great example of a beautiful chart by George Martin, you know, just this beautiful brass chart that just really complements Paul's song. And, you know, it's another just incredibly beautiful song.
Douglas, did you want to come in on this? Or
my impression of the arrangements on Mother Nature's Son, which are terrific, is that it lies just about halfway between Martha, My Dear and Blackbird. They kind of sound like they might even be a suite of three.
I mean, you're saying that Mother Nature's Son is kind of a stylistic bridge between the other two?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
sitting singing songs for everyone. Sit beside a mountain stream, see her waters rise. Listen to the pretty sound of music as she
So we're almost to the end of our second hour. Not enough time to squeeze in another song, really, but maybe we could talk a little bit about this package. What did you guys make of this all-white album design?
Innovative. It was different. Here they had been so explosive in colors and music in their previous releases, and suddenly here was this
because
a slice of bread.
Right, because Sgt. Pepper, Magical Mystery Tour, Yellow Submarine couldn't have been more colorful or more psychedelic, and then this comes along.
When I first saw the White Album cover, I thought I had a promo copy in my hands, and it had been released prior to the cover art having been completed.
The design was suggested by artist Richard Hamilton, and you know, I wonder if he got credit or paid for this very simple design. What about this poster and these color 8x10 photographs of each member of the band that came into it? Really high quality.
Right, high quality individual photos.
Key word, individual. No group photos.
Right.
The end of the Beatles, damn it. Like, where's the mop tops? I just want them to cut their hair and get the matching suits on again. Ugh. It's freaking me out.
We have the rest of Side 3 plus all of Side 4 yet to come in our final hour of our program. So more of the Beatles' White Album and more from our panel coming up. Special thanks to John Oswick. Our engineer is Roman Garcia. Thanks to KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico, too. I'm Paul Ingles. I hope you can join us for the next hour of the White Album Listening Party.